versus Chicago Transit Authority. Andre?
May it please the court, counsel. This is a case where, interestingly, there was a finding by the district court judge that despite a motion for summary judgment on a hostile work environment case, that the plaintiff was able to establish that summary judgment was not proper on the hostile work environment claim. The court went on, however, to make a determination that CTA was not liable. The individual defendants, their matters were settled out, Mr. Marshall and Mr. Carmichael. That the court went on to find that the evidence that would have established liability on the part of the CTA could not oppose summary judgment because it was uncorroborated. The essence of what Ms. Berry indicated was that her supervisor told her that, first of all, if she continued to complain against Carmichael and also against Marshall, that she could be fired from her position. In addition, the supervisor, Mr. Gorman, also opposed her being put on a status where her injury would be considered an injured on the job injury. If that were the case, then her entitlement to compensation would be a much higher amount than if it were not a job-related injury, which is what was ultimately determined, and that even before the workers' compensation claim was determined. And so, although there's a determination by the trial court that there was no adverse effect that my client suffered, my client was limited to short-term disability payments as opposed to injured-on-duty payments. And my client obviously was unable to work because of the injuries that she suffered. For those reasons, we believe that there was an adverse action that my client suffered. We also believe that the idea that a non-movement opposing summary judgment must corroborate her testimony is incorrect. There was much argument. I believe Judge Roebner weighed in many times on this argument about the idea of self-serving affidavits and how that was trumpeted all along as somehow being defective. And I think that Judge Roebner appropriately made a determination and been followed up by the court repeatedly that a self-serving affidavit or self-serving statements by a plaintiff opposing summary judgment or any party opposing summary judgment is a valid way to oppose summary judgment as long as it meets with all the other requirements of opposition to summary judgment.
Mr. Andre, where did Ms. Berry preserve her claim for retaliation? Did she raise it in the EEOC proceedings? Is it in her complaint? What's your best argument that the claim wasn't waived?
Well, the best argument is that, first of all, we raised it in the argument concerning summary judgment, and the court addressed it in the opinion on the argument for summary judgment. And so for that reason, we feel that the retaliation claim was brought up with regard to the whole issues of summary judgment.
And another question that I had, thank you for that, is what is the status of Ms. Berry's claim for workers' compensation?
Interesting point. We have now another case pending in the district court because Ms. Berry's claim for workers' comp was denied. Ms. Berry, shortly after that, was terminated from her position. So that's the current status of Ms. Berry's claim with regard to workers' comp and also the current status of her employment with CTA. She now has no job with CTA. She did take an appeal to the circuit court, which is the level you go to after workers' compensation, and that appeal is pending in the circuit court on the issue of the workers' comp. But she is currently terminated from her position, and there is a second federal court matter just based upon the fact that Judge Conlon was pretty much saying that since there wasn't a decision on workers' comp, since there now has been a decision on workers' comp, since she's been terminated, there is now a second case pending in the district court.
But not in front of Judge Conlon?
No, not in judge of, not in front of Judge Conlon. It's in front of, I can't think of the name right now, but I'll think of it later.
That's okay.
But in any event, that's where we are with regard to all of the claims here. We just feel that the idea, because Judge Posner, Judge Conlon brought this up twice, the idea of the need for corroboration in opposing summary judgment, and that just simply is not a requirement. And so for that reason, the decision by Judge Conlon should be, respectfully, should be reversed on that point, and my client should have been allowed to proceed based on the fact that there were adverse effects, less money that she suffered, and also based upon the fact that my client also did not need to corroborate what she was told directly by her supervisor. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you, counsel. Ms. Kaplan?
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Rachel Kaplan, and I represent the CTA. The CTA respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's decision granting its summary judgment. Plaintiff raised two claims below. One was for sex discrimination, and the other was for a hostile work environment. However, she was unable to meet her prima facie case on either of these claims, and therefore her lawsuit was properly dismissed. As to Berry's sex discrimination claim, Berry asserted that she was denied workers' compensation benefits, but she provided absolutely no facts to support that allegation. Instead,
forgive me for a moment.
Sure.
Am I missing something? How can grabbing a woman by the breasts and pulling her to a standing position not be sexual in nature? I mean, on summary judgment, when we are construing reasonable inferences in her favor, the argument that this was not gender-based or that it was not severe enough to create a hostile environment seems very unusual.
Your Honor, as it relates to Berry's hostile work environment claim, as the district court found, even if the facts that Berry alleged were absolutely true, which the CTA disputes, however, for the purposes of summary judgment, we will take them as true, Berry did not show any basis for employer liability here. And that is one of the prompts.
Well, wait a minute. She goes to the boss the next day, Gorman, and says, here's what happened. He says, you're a pain in the butt. Women aren't the only ones who can file claims. And if you continue to bring these claims against what's-his-name, you could lose your job. That's pretty involved.
Well, first, with regard to what action the CTA took, upon receiving a complaint from Berry, the CTA immediately investigated. It interviewed anyone who might have information. It made an assessment as to what occurred.
But he's the one that's going out and doing the interviews after saying these things to her.
Even if the supervisor, Michael Gorman, made those comments to Berry, it cannot be said that those comments were severe, pervasive. There were two or three stray remarks at most.
In isolation, I suppose, but this is the day after she's grabbed from behind by her breast, picked up, fondled, thrown against a fence. They don't get stray at that point. They're pretty closely linked. It's in direct response to what she told him about the event.
Relative to other cases that this course has decided as to hostile work environment, they do not even come close to the level of severity that this court has found.
I suppose you're right in complete isolation, but with that link to in time and to her complaint about this event, they're not in isolation.
Well, I'm not saying they were in isolation. I'm saying there were only two or three comments at most. And in the CTA's position, that did not rise to a level of severity, as Judge Conlon also found. Also, those comments were not based
on... I hope that's not in the CTA manual on how a manager is to respond to a complaint of sexual harassment.
If, in fact, Mr. Gorman, the supervisor, responded in that way, the CTA, of course, would not condone that behavior. But taking that aside, the CTA maintains that the degrees and the elements of a hostile work environment simply weren't present here. The comments, if any, made by Gorman to Berry were not sexual in nature. They weren't based on her gender, and they simply were comments.
You're a pain in the butt. Women aren't the only ones who can file sexual harassment charges in response to what she's telling him about the previous day's events.
The CT maintains that the comment, if any, made by Gorman to Berry is that was that men and women could both bring sexual harassment charges. It wasn't a gender-specific comment, and it wasn't a sexual comment. And in order for there to be a hostile work environment, there needs to be a sexual comment. There needs to be a comment based on the individual's gender.
Yeah, but you have to take a look at what precipitated the comments. Now, if you pick a man up by his chest, I don't think it's quite the same as grabbing a woman by her breasts.
Both the CTA's investigator as well as the police department independently determined that Berry, in fact, was the aggressor here, not
the
co-worker.
But we have to take her version of it at summary judgment. We can't look at the ultimate review of it by others. That's weighing the testimony.
Even if we take her view of it, the CTA maintains that she didn't meet the necessary elements or components of a hostile work environment here.
Could we then discuss the court and I guess your view that a plaintiff requires corroboration for claims of sexual harassment or retaliation? Because after 25 years of saying that's not so, I need to know what case law supports that view.
That's not really the CTA's position. As it relates to Berry's retaliation claim, the CTA avers, much as Your Honor did previously, that plaintiff did not preserve that claim because plaintiff did not aver it either in her EEOC charge or in her district court complaint. As to the other issue of uncorroborated evidence, that's not really the CTA's position. The CTA's position as it relates to Berry's sex discrimination claim is that she didn't prove an adverse employment action and that she didn't support her allegations with any facts whatsoever. So, for example, Berry alleged that she that the CTA sabotaged its own internal investigation as well as the police department's investigation and that it manipulated forms to ensure that the alleged harassers were not punished and that it submitted false police reports. But Berry did not provide a single fact supporting those very conclusory allegations. So it's not really the CTA's position that it was uncorroborated. It was that these were conclusory allegations unsupported by any facts. It is true that Judge Conlon did focus on the uncorroborated nature, but the CTA doesn't think you need to go that far. The CTA would assert that even if you take the plaintiff's claims at face value here, they were wholly unsupported by any facts, and so therefore they cannot stand.
You know, if you take any message back to the CTA, it would be, please, stop requiring corroboration for claims of sexual harassment or retaliation.
And I don't believe that was the CTA's position here. I think its determination
came out of the court.
Concluded that there was no harassment. And further that Berry's conduct triggered the conduct by her coworker. Unless there are any further questions.
Well, I did want to get back to Judge Tinder's question. That is, whether or not there were question of material fact raised. And there was a mention of the CTA investigator and the Chicago police. How was that submitted to Judge Conlon, or was it?
It was. It was information that Judge Conlon had before her and which she included in her decision.
I mean, how was it, by affidavit or by...
It was submitted in the Undisputed Statement of Material Facts. Does that respond to your question?
Does that raise a question of fact, then? We've got two versions.
Well, the police department and the CTA both agreed that there was no sexual harassment here.
Right. And then the petitioner is the one that raised the other side.
Right. And even if we take the petitioner or the plaintiff at her word, we maintain that she didn't meet the elements necessary for a hostile work environment claim here for the reasons already stated.
So we go back to it's really a circular argument.
In what respect, Your Honor? I'm not
you're
following.
Back to, you know, that this was not a hostile work environment because picking someone up by their breasts isn't a gender-based that's not gender-based or severe enough to create a hostile working environment.
Just to clarify my position, while it's true that one incidence of sexual harassment, especially if it's severe, can constitute hostile work environment, that has to be balanced against what action the employer took, if any, upon receiving the complaint. And because the CT immediately investigated, interviewed all the witnesses, separated the parties, and did its best to prevent any future problems between the parties, there can't be a basis for employer liability here, even if the incident occurred exactly like plaintiff averts.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Andre, how much time?
Thank you. Interestingly, counsel for the CTA is arguing that Judge Conlon was wrong about the hostile work environment situation, which I can't for the life of me understand how. And secondly, that Judge Conlon was wrong when she said corroboration was necessary. And their argument is no, corroboration is not necessary, which is my argument as well. So they seem to be throwing Judge Conlon under the bus as far as her opinion is concerned.
Don't worry about Judge Conlon.
Oh, I don't have to. Believe me, I know better than that. I know much better than that, Judge.
Pity the poor boss, huh?
But my point, though, is, and Judge Tinder raised it pretty much, and that was that the facts have to be interpreted in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, not in the light that is required, even after, as Judge Caney pointed out, some investigation by the police, so-called, or investigation by the CTA, both of which, interestingly, were investigations that were shepherded by Mr. Gorman, who called the police in privately to himself, and also who relayed the information to Ms. Chrysler, who was the EEO investigator. We believe that for all those reasons, since the CTA is conceding no corroboration is necessary, we think that this case has to be reversed and go back down and Ms. Berry allowed to present her case.
Now, let me just make sure I understood that you maintain that Ms. Berry preserved her claim for retaliation in the motion for summary judgment.
In the response to the motion for summary judgment. In fact,
not in her complaint.
I don't believe it was in her complaint. I'll concede that point.
And it was not raised in the EEOC proceedings.
I'm not certain of that. I can't, because I know that my client amended her EEO complaint at one point. But I would point out that, generally speaking, when it comes to retaliation claims that spring from prior EEO charges that were filed don't require a separate charge. And so even if there were not in the EEO charge, you still can bring a retaliation claim. We would ask that the decision respectfully of Judge Conlon be reversed and that my client be permitted to have her day at trial. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.